Welcome to a storm of spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my favorite moment of Call of Thrones was a 2 a.m. conversation I had on Saturday about Louisiana taxes versus Texas taxes.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and my favorite part of Con of Thrones was the moment in our last panel of the week. No, my second. Anyway, the last great debate we had, a fellow named Justin proposed to his lady, and it was just a big deal and really great and fun. So thanks, Justin. I don't actually think you're a listener, but thanks for doing that. It was really fun.
He should be now. Hi, Justin.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my favorite moment came a little bit after Justin's moment when I finally won a great debate, which is something that had not happened in 2 years of almost two full years of Con of Thrones. So thank you to those of you who were there and voted.
And we're back. You heard our live show. We put it in the feed for you last week. And if you were into Game of Thrones like this podcast was originally about, that was all for you. But we're back on our off-season tour kick. And, of course, back to superheroes. A very confusing one and a very funny one this week. We're going to be talking about season two of Legion, which wraps up almost a week from when this podcast is released, a little less, next Tuesday. And Deadpool 2, which has been out for long enough that that's going to be the back end of our podcast, and we are going to spoil all of it. Hopefully you've seen it now, if you're going to see it. But first, Joanna, do we have any reviews?
We do have a few reviews. I am going to read this one from Ah Bronwell, who says, three goofballs in a glass cage of emotion. or glass case of emotion, sorry. Five stars. Having listened for a few years now, I owe you three a five-star review for way too long. Thanks for the entertaining look into Game of Thrones and the wild ride during the off-season tour. Whispered in with all the gruff splendiferousness of Dave pontificating on how Marvel and Lucasfilm clearly don't respect their own IPs. To prospective listeners, while you'll need to buckle up for the occasional social justice warrioring rant time extreme 2000 from time to time, the combination of nostalgic silliness, humbly insightful nuance theories, bold Neil is probably wrong and proud interpretations, and caring with a strong tinge of inclusive perspectives make for a hyper entertaining show that I am more than happy to recommend. At Joanna, Neil, and Dave, keep making this wonderful show and being the incredible people you are. P.S. I wouldn't mind if you can get a Flight of the Navigator episode in at some point because something, 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 you know, it's awesome. I will have more to say on that last part in a little bit. And let me just read one more after that lengthy one. I will read this one, which is one star. I would like this podcast, says CFKWF. I would like this podcast, except for the 10 minutes they spend reading reviews. Very irritating.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Oh, that's a good
So,
if it would have been five star, that would have been perfect.
Exactly.
So thank you. We got several good reviews. We'll keep reading them, much to CFKWF's dismay. Thank you so much. And that is it for me.
Awesome. I also wanted to put a pin in Flight of the Navigator pod and come back to that later because I would be into that. Neil, we're going to switch up your section a little bit because we've been talking about a lot of things already. And they're repetitive things, and sometimes they're Game of Thrones things. So let's throw something new down.
Yeah. Well, we're restructuring a little bit in our post Con of Thrones haze, I guess. We talked about this already, and we're gonna do that in sort of a different way, but also we're gonna take the Game of Thrones stuff and put it somewhere else, and we're gonna talk about that somewhere else here in just a little bit. But first, we are going to go storm chasing.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's very... I hope somewhere Dave can put like a crack of lightning underneath that. We'll see. anyway. So we're using meteorological metaphors here. And when you think about the storm, the storms of pop culture are all of these different things that draw us in and require our energy. And so this is going to be a segment where we each choose one thing, whether it's a movie, a show, a book, a podcast, a story, a trend, a thought. And we're going to talk about the one storm that we are chasing most intently this week. I will start and I will give you an example. This actually came up right before we started recording. So the storm I am chasing this week is that they are going to make, and you guys might want to sit down for this.
The like laugh in your voice just as you started it made me really happy. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Warner Brothers, in all their infinite wisdom, and you know how Warner Brothers is the studio you think of when you think, man, this studio really learns all the right lessons.
Yeah.
From everything they do. They are going to now make a Jared Leto-led Joker standalone movie simultaneously with their Todd Phillips-directed, Martin Scorsese-produced Joker origin movie.
Simultaneously.
Starring Joaquin Phoenix.
With the like Gotham City Sirens movie, which is the Harley Quinn sort of all-female spin-off.
Simultaneously with like 13 million other random DC ideas. I have several things to say about this.
Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question first? This relates to this. In 2016, is that when it happened? When Suicide Squad came out? Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you like,
I like that you described it as something that happened because I felt victimized.
Were you like, hey, this is a movie that's going to have at least two spinoffs? And when you thought that, did you think, hey, one of them is definitely going to center on this Jared Leto character?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, I didn't, but someone did, apparently. So they're doubling down on this whole thing. Here's the good news is that the project doesn't even have a writer yet, so it all could just be one of those things that somebody says, and then it doesn't happen, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
My second thing is, I don't understand. I mean, I love Batman. Love Batman. Batman's like my guy, my dude. And I have loved the animated series and the original quadrilogy. I love most of that. And I am a firm believer that The Dark Knight is probably the greatest superhero film of all time. And I think, you know, between Heath Ledger, Jack Nicholson, we've probably seen the most we need to see of the Joker. We get the Joker. Also, shouts to Mark Hamill. His voice, at least. The Jared Leto Joker, to me, is what I like to call a Gino. A Joker in name only.
Ooh.
They call him the Joker.
Ooh.
Yeah, Gino. That's his new acronym. They
I
call
saw it
him
in
the Joker,
doc,
but he's not.
I saw it in the doc, and I just didn't know what it meant, and I'm so delighted to know what Gino means now.
I mean, listen, I don't have a problem with Jared Leto. Even his performance in Suicide Squad is a choice, but there's just nothing about that version of the character that is interesting or anything other than like just like a Hot Topic fever dream. So I don't think we need that movie. I don't even think we're gonna get that movie. So I'm calling this a storm that is not gonna happen. This is a bad meteorological prediction by the people making it. But yeah, it feels like right now with DC, it feels like there's a million projects out there and only like 10 are going to get through. And I don't think this is going to be one of them.
Yeah. Shout out to the Crow remake, which, as I predicted, died this week.
But I'm hey, gonna, what is dead may never die, right?
It's ironic because it's the Crow and it's having a really hard time coming back to life. And if you saw the first Crow movie, there we go. Hey, so people still remember that movie. I'm going to go next because apparently I'm talking. Oh, okay. You saw it for the first time?
Yeah.
Interesting. I feel like that's a topic we're going to have to also revisit. I have a lot of thoughts about The Crow. For a while, I was the person in charge of searching for the script for the new Crow movie. And it did not happen under my watch because that's bad. Anyway, I'm going to recommend a podcast. It is the second season of a true crime podcast called In the Dark. The first season had to do with a child abduction. This second season is telling the story of Curtis Flowers, who is a man accused of murdering four people in a furniture shop in Mississippi in 1996 and has gone to trial six times and been found guilty. Then it was overturned. Then he appealed, found guilty, overturned by the Mississippi Supreme Court for various reasons, mostly having to do with the particular DA who keeps trying to try him improperly presenting evidence at trial. And I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. I'm very particular about what makes, I think, a good true crime podcast or maybe an overly sensationalist true crime podcast. This is legit journalism, uncovering new facts. And they launched, I think, four episodes at once. There's a total of, I think, seven episodes out now. The newest one came out this week. They are doing some amazing work on this old case, which has an appeal that's currently happening. And this podcast's evidence is going to influence that appeal for sure, which will become more and more evident as the podcast goes on. So if true crime is your thing, and podcasts are your thing, obviously, because you're listening to one now. Check out In the Dark Season 2. Both seasons are good, but Season 2 is doing that very rare true crime podcast thing where they are actually going to influence the outcome of the case, I think.
Very cool. Dave has more of a taste for murder than I have, so my next one does not involve murder yet, but murderous feelings from me, which is I just wanted to talk briefly about something that, like, we're recording this on a Tuesday, just as Neil said, minutes after the Jared Leto Joker news.
Timestamp it in history. Right after the Jared Leto news.
This is like
we'll be hearing this podcast 2 days after the Jared Leto news breaks.
As Rachel Maddow would say, it's been a busy day.
This is like when we recorded in the middle of an election. All right, so
this is like when we recorded our live show last weekend in a Todd Stark world.
It's true. Anyway, also raging through at least my Twitter feed today was a big conversation around the actress Kelly Marie Tran. I think this news sort of cropped up yesterday, but it really caught fire today, that she had erased all of the content from her Instagram account, reportedly as a result of some bullying that she's experienced from people who did not like The Last Jedi, or at least did not like her role or performance as Rose Tycho in The Last Jedi, the latest. Not even the latest Star Wars film. This got me kind of angry, and a friend of the pod, Lindsay Romaine, kind of angry. If you want to see some eloquent anger from her about the nature of the fandom, I suggest you check out her Twitter feed. Also, our friend Dave Gonzalez, who you might have heard of, was also doing some righteous tweets. Lindsay's at Lindsay Romaine. That's LindseyRomain. This conversation even broke director Rian Johnson, who sort of lashed out about some of the toxicity that's currently running through the Star Wars fandom. A friend of mine, Brendan Katz, wrote a great piece. He started for The Observer. About the toxic Star Wars fandom that he interviewed me about a couple weeks ago. It looks like Brandon was just slightly ahead of a breaking point that happened today in terms of the conversation. Anyway, point being, a lot of conversations about toxicity and fandom, frankly, some white supremacy running through various fandoms. And as many people pointed out, this is not unique to Star Wars, but as Lindsay eloquently pointed out, saying, oh, it happens everywhere, sort of, I don't know, normalizes it in a way that I don't think it's useful to do. And I think it's a good idea to just sort of really dig into what we're seeing in the Star Wars fandom right now. We can talk about the DC fandom, we can talk about the Marvel fandom, but the Star Wars fandom right now. And sort of what I was advocating for for the good fans, because I know there are so many of you who are good Star Wars fans. Even if you didn't like The Last Jedi, it doesn't make you a bad Star Wars fan. It just makes you someone with an opinion. But for the good Star Wars fans, you try to smother the toxicity that you see in your fandom. And this goes for any fandom. So try to smother the toxicity that you see. Try to fight against it. Try to come to the defense of people who are being attacked. I think it's a fight worth fighting. And I know that there's this pervasive philosophy of ignore the trolls, don't feed the trolls. But I really actually am not sure that works quite as well as people think anymore. What were you saying?
We've had precursors to this conversation before, I feel, about excising toxic fandom, or as I tried to put it erroneously because I don't think it was nuanced enough, trolling for good.
Okay. Is this a part of the conversation where I say you were right about something I said you were wrong about before?
No. I'm re-engaging with the trolling for good concepts.
Great.
Troll for good. Try to bring it back. Bring it back like juice and oranges.
Yes. Troll for good as long as doesn't get in the way.
I thought we killed the oranges.
As long as it doesn't get in the way of your mental health. You know what I mean? And this is something that Dave enjoys doing it. If you don't enjoy doing it, don't worry about it. Anyway, I just want to talk about it. It made me really angry and frustrated. Made me break my New Year's resolution to not have a Twitter fight because I sort of had a little bit of a Twitter fight this afternoon. Timestamp it. Tuesday is when I broke my last remaining New Year's resolution.
But so wait. So T-minus 6 hours before the Jared Leto Joker movie announcement.
I think it was only an hour.
Minus one.
B Gino. But anyway. And all that's to say, when I told Neil that I wanted to talk about this, he was sort of like, okay. I don't know tone of voice, but he was just sort of like, okay.
No, I said, okay.
Okay. He said, okay.
Yeah.
It was in text. There wasn't an exclamation mark, so I didn't know what it meant. And I was afraid that meant, you were wary, you didn't want me to do this because of, my social.
Oh, no. Do you want to hear? Do you want to hear what I did today related to this?
Sure. Yes.
So I, I'm known for gentle subtweeting through One Perfect Shot, which is a very popular Twitter account that I control. Mm-hmm. So I posted, one of my interns actually, Pierce, who's just came on, this is a bold move in his first week, was like, we should tweet this shot, and it's a shot of Kelly Marie Tran and John Boyega sort of at the end where there's an explosion happening behind him, and she's looking at him what the fuck was wrong with you?
Yeah.
So we tweeted that. And it brought some of the ugliness out of the woodwork. Hmm. But what I did was I sat there most of the afternoon and watched, for every one angry, stupid comment that we got about it being, a shitty movie or whatever, or, there were, 10 people just, dive-bombing these people with, we don't want this opinion here. We don't need this.
Yes.
Nobody cares. Great. Just move on with your life. So it was great. I feel like I orchestrated some of what you're talking about, and I'm very happy to be participating in that particular war.
Yeah, I like what Neil's doing, which is create spaces, and what I'm trying to do is I will point out people that I think should be shunned out of the Star Wars fandom. So, I think it's really important, especially that us as content creators take a really active role in this if we want it to succeed, in that we can control more of the conversation than we think by just ignoring certain parts of it. So it's really bad right now, and it should be fought for sure, and that's what I think everybody needs to do, and the fandom gets to police itself. But there's also, I think, a level that the three of us are on and some of you listening are on, where you're actually putting out content related to Star Wars or geekdom or dealing with this fandom on one-on-one level. And you could foster this along both by creating spaces for the proper decision, but also by excising your peers that are not helping.
All that's to say, there's a lot of negativity and we might get a little negative about the TV show Legion in a minute too, but I want to turn it back around to a bright side, which was sort of my reaction to Neil's okay, which I wasn't sure if it was a trepidatious okay. It wasn't, but that's great. Which is, this happens every year when I go to Con of Thrones, which is something we're going to talk about next. When I go to Con of Thrones, this Game of Thrones convention that we have been a part of for 2 years now, my faith in the fandom is so bolstered and renewed because it's so easy, engaging as we do most of the time with the online fandom, to forget how great and beautiful and special so many of our listeners are, so many of our readers are, so many of the people who have never heard of us are, but who just love Game of Thrones. And, with, I would say, two glaring exceptions at Game of Thrones this year, and that's really not bad when it comes to cons. Everyone at the Hyatt in Dallas last weekend, 2 weekends ago, just warmed my heart. It was so lovely to meet so many of you and to meet new people who hadn't heard of us and maybe are listening now, maybe not, who knows, but like it was just so lovely to meet all of you. It made me really happy. It's the happiest I think I've been all year. It was such a delight. So that's the silver lining of, like, you know, for every fuck you drove an actress off Instagram, you bastards, like, feeling that I have, I just have to think about Con of Thrones and all the people who came up and talked to me and talked to us about what this show, which is just us like goofing off together, means to them. It meant a lot to me. So thank you.
You know, this is an interesting thought I had after Con of Thrones. And this actually takes us into our discussion, I guess, of Con of Thrones. The people who, like, the really invested people in a fandom, the kind of people who would go to a convention about something, are people that have to put effort in. They put effort into their fandom. And the people who jump into some, you know, actor or actress's mentions and say horribly racist things or stuff like that, that doesn't take any work. That doesn't even take any intelligence. Like, anyone can be a garbage person.
Yeah, so those are people who are not paying attention to John Hamm and Legion, obviously.
Right. So it's really great to see the people that put work into their fandom and actually, you know, care about enjoying it with other people instead of just being a troll on the internet, which, you know, that, I don't know, that's got to get old at some point. But I tell you what won't get old is the happiness of going to Con of Thrones. And so that's, I just really wanted to say, to, you know, on the air, say thanks to the con for having us again, which was great. And then, of course, thanks to everyone who came out. And first of all, everyone in Storm of Spoilers merch, which was awesome. Like, our first panel was like the whole front row had Chaos is Lit t-shirts on. It was amazing. So many actual, like, legit people who listen, people who pay more attention to the podcast than maybe I do sometimes. And we just had so much fun. Just a lot of fun with the great debates. And someone did ask us on Twitter if we would explain the Todd Stark thing.
Yeah.
Where to even begin? How did the Todd Stark thing happen?
Can I do it since I've
absolutely
done it a couple times now? I think I got it. All right. So we host, if you've never been to Con of Thrones, and I really hope you all come next year. There were so, like, I want to say between the first Con of Thrones and the second Con of Thrones, there were so many more of, like, our listeners there. I know our listenership grew between the two cons, but, like, at our live show, I think I pulled the audience to see, like, who was actually listeners, and it was most of the people, versus the year before, it was just, like, some people. And we host a series of panels there called The Great Debates, which you may be aware of because they've spilled over onto the podcast a little bit, where we debate certain superlative sort of topics in Game of Thrones fandom, like Best Lover in Westeros, Worst Place to Live in Westeros, or Planetos, I should say, Who Should Sit on the Iron Throne, et cetera, et cetera. So this joke, this Todd Stark joke, which you might have seen on our Twitter accounts, came out of those great debate panels, and this is how it went. The first one we did was Most Consequential Death, I believe, right?
Best Stark.
Yeah, we most started with the weird one.
Best Stark or Superlative Stark or whatever. And someone nominated the young man that we saw in season, was it 6, I think, who, you know, in a flashback that Bran sees this young shirtless man get a shard of obsidian stuck in his chest and we assume becomes the Night King. There is a very popular theory that probably the first Stark, that the Night King was a Stark once upon a time. So he's like, that guy, that's Stark. And so we're like, sure, shirtless Rando Stark. Sure. Great. So we called him just like Shirtless Stark or Rando Stark. But by the second panel, second great debate, which was Most Consequential Death, that guy got nominated again, mostly for laughs, I think. And so then Neil decides to name him and he goes, oh yeah, Todd Stark. And then Paul and Melanie, who are like two lovely listeners who are sitting in the front row, Paul was like, Todrick Stark, which I thought was really funny. So that guy, that shirtless Stark, maybe, who becomes the Night King, became Todrick Stark, and for the rest of the weekend, Todrick Stark, spelled T-O-D-R-I-C-K, got nominated for every great debate and became sort of like one of the running jokes of the con. By the end of the con, there was some like lovely Dallas locals had made t-shirts that said Todrick Stark lives or something like that on them. And it just sort of, yeah, became a running joke with the con. It sort of spilled over into other corners of the convention that had nothing to do with the Great Debates. And we now have merch related to Todd Stark. I will be only be calling the Night King Todd or Todrick Stark from now on.
Oh, yeah. Anyone who was there, no way you're not thinking Todd next time that guy shows up on the show.
Yeah, but like even if you weren't there, like just like let's make it happen. Our most fervent wish is that Todd Stark, who got nominated for Best Lover because winter is always coming, somehow makes it into the show. That would be like the ultimate amazing thing. They could still not like that they'll call him Todd Stark, but maybe
Todd,
some reference to a Todd. That's our dream, so just spread it around, right? Make it happen. Todd Stark,
or he may, you know what would be even better is if he made it into one of the books. I think we could convince George.
George put like fucking football jokes in his books, so I think
we need like a concentrated social media campaign. Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
And it starts with merchandise. And knowing the joke you're telling, welcome there all was, of you to the Cult of Todd.
There was not Storm of Spoilers, but there was Todd Stark merch online before the con ended, which I thought was crazy. And there's a Twitter account. There's just like the Cult of Todd knows no bounds.
There is, if you like think, oh, so like Neil said, it was so nice to see all of you wearing your amazing Storm of Spoilers merch at like all your shirts at the con. That warmed my heart. But if you want to get any like official Todd merch that we have up, because we do, and we also have some Storm of Spoilers, like new Storm of Spoilers merch up, you can go to redbubble.com/people/wikirascals/shop. That's a really easy URL to remember, right? Redbubble.com.
We'll create a short URL for it at some point.
/people/wikirascals/shop. Wikirascals, WIKIRASCALS. Our friend and listener made some great designs that you should check out, including a few other inside Con of Thrones jokes and some other. There's a Jorah up there. There's a great Tormund shirt. It's a lot of good stuff. So,
I have my Todswood shirt is on order.
The Todswood is so good. Anyway, so thank you guys for putting up with our inside jokes. I know that there's like some people have FOMO because they weren't able to be at Con of Thrones, so like I know that we talk a lot about it a lot. We talked about it for an entire year leading up to it basically, but it really is an amazing experience. I hope that all of you can come to it next year. I've been told it's in the summer. I haven't been told where it's going to be yet, but I hope you can all come because
wait like during the airing of Game of Thrones summer.
Well, we don't know when Game of Thrones is airing next year, so
I think it'll either be
I've heard like, they do not want to do it at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, at the same time seems like, after or before would seem better than
I would love to have, I personally would, this is not up to us, we don't run this con, but like I would prefer to have it before, to have like one more, because all the other conventions will be after the end, right? So to have one more that happens before the end, I think would be ideal. The only problem is like if the con happens too close to when the show airs, that means like all talent will be sort of tied up. So
right. So we'll after the show would probably be better,
or like enough before the show that it's, you know, I don't know. Anyway, we will see. That's a little inside con baseball, but you know, we will definitely be back. We had such a fun time meeting other Game of Thrones podcasters as well, and like I said, meeting all of you. So thank you.
Super.
Each
fun.
Year gets a little better. That's not a real song. That's a song I just made up right now.
But it's also true.
That's true. Speaking of things about the show and conventions and stuff that are changing, what's our newest adventure after launching Storm Chasing, which is this week's biggest adventure? But what's our second largest adventure, Neil?
Yes, we're launching a cool thing on Patreon. Have you guys heard of this? Is it Patreon or Patreon?
Patreon.
I think it's Patreon, too, because you have patrons. Anyway,
but you have patronage. Or patronage. I think it depends if you're British, but Jack Conti, who I went to high school with, founded Patreon, and he's American, so Patreon.
Oh, nice. Anyway, so we are going to be on Patreon. What does that mean? That means that you can now become a subscriber to our... You can become a patron, and you can give us money, but you'll get stuff for it. We should start with why we're doing this. Joanna, why are we doing this? Why are we doing a Patreon where people can give us money?
We have been operating this podcast at a financial loss for several months now. you might have noticed a complete dearth of ads, and our hosting fees have been sort of monumental. So we love doing this podcast. We love listening or like talking to you guys every week, stuff like that. We love it. We love it. It's hard to do it at a financial loss. And so we would love to do it at something of financial gain. And we would love to expand it and do even more. Like, we heard from people at the con that there's like more content that they would love for us. So we would love to do that for you if we can figure out a way to do that. And a way that we can figure out to do that is to, you know, have some compensation for our added time. So this is not changing the normal feed at almost at all, I would say, except for the fact that we are now, as Neil alluded to earlier, maybe moving some Game of Thrones news elsewhere. But, you know, the normal feed will always be free. We want to keep that free. That is free to you guys. But we will have some extra added fun content for Patreon subscribers.
So much fun. I would like to tell you all about some of the things. We're going to have... What? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So if you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, you'll find that there are three levels of rewards that you can get. You can give us $1. You can give us $5 or more. You can give us $10 or more, depending on what you want. And there's some things that everyone is going to get, no matter how much money you get, give us. We are going to have some Patreon exclusive content, written content from the three of us, that will include Dave's burger recipes, which is a whole nother story that that would take a whole podcast to explain. Just know that Dave has good burger recipes and he wants to share them with you.
Just know that Dave makes a burger almost every single day. Just know that.
Dave has, yeah, let's leave good up to the eye of the beholder or the mouth of the eater. I have burger recipes for you.
Okay.
I promise.
So every day. Dave makes a burger.
Dave loves burgers. He's gonna share that love with you. And me, I'm excited about that. I'm glad that I get to access that content. Joanna is going to be doing a book club where she talks about books.
I read books, and we're going to talk
about books.
Them.
It's crazy. And I'm going to do, we're moving the Game of Thrones and other stuff, I guess, to a new weekly thing called Neil's Theory Corner. I was going to call it Neilstradamus Speaks. Maybe we'll workshop it a little bit. Anyway,
I feel like the SEO on the second one, once you own it for life.
Neilstradamus.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe we'll do that. So that's very exciting. You'll get all that content. You'll also get invited to a special patron-only Storm of Spoilers Slack group where we can chat every day if you want. And that'll be fun. And we're going to build a little community in there. We're going to talk about all kinds of different stuff. It'll be great.
Like,
you'll get all the too hot for Twitter reactions.
Right, the real hot takes.
When the news breaks that Jared Leto is getting his own Joker movie, we'll be in there talking about
reset,
it.
Reset the before Christ, after Christ clock. It happened.
So that's going to be fun. One of the things we learned from Con of Thrones, we had a little Slack group with some of our friends, and it's just a lot of fun. It just is going to be very random. We'll also be keeping a running tally of our fallen patrons. Mm-hmm. That'll be fun. Mm-hmm. But here's the big one. So that's, everybody gets all that stuff. But the big thing is, if you are in the $5 a month or more tier, you are going to get actual more podcasts. You're going to get an extra segment every week. So we'll do a whole different topic, well, or maybe an extension of a topic. We haven't, well, it's going to evolve over time.
So one-star reviewer guy who was like, they spent 10 minutes reading reviews, who's now like 30 minutes into this podcast about Legion and Deadpool 2. You could have that segment in a separate place, maybe.
Right. And we're not going to do any other stuff, just that segment. So you get a whole bonus segment. It'll be very fun. No reviews. And you won't have to hear us talk about the Patreon, which is something we're going to talk about a lot forever. It's ad-free. Anyway, so that'll be fun. We're also going to work out some exclusive access to different merchandise. And then there's a whole $10 tier we call the Small Council, where you get some other cool stuff, like a monthly on-air shout-out. You're going to get some discounts on Storm Spoilers merch. And you're going to join the Storm of Spoilers Movie Club, which we are going to be doing monthly live watch parties of different movies. And you'll be able to vote on it. You'll be able to, obviously, watch the movie with us. We're working out the technological boundaries of that. And it's going to be super fun because, you know what I decided is that we do good commentary. I do great commentary.
Okay. I don't know if I can promise great commentary, but I think it'll be really fun for us all to watch a movie together. The idea of voting on which movie to watch. So basically, Storm of Spoils will have an episode every month.
Should we
now
have a rule where like we can only watch the same movie once? Because otherwise, I feel like we're just going to get Tremors over and over and over again.
Yes. We'll make some rules, but like Storm of Spoilers is going to have a monthly episode about a movie. That's just going to happen. Everyone's going to hear that. But if you're a Patreon subscriber at a certain level, you can help vote on which movie that's going to be, and then you can watch the movies with us if we get to a certain number of subscribers. And this is where I want to circle back to someone in the reviews mentioning Flight of the Navigator, or Dave wanting to talk more about The Crow. Like, these are movies that we can like do a whole episode about if like we have a consensus and decide that's what we want to do. So I think it would be really fun to do something like Flight of the Navigator or The Crow as one of our movie club movies. And only you can help decide if you are at a certain level on our Patreon page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So check it out. Patreon, which is patreon.com/Storm of Spoilers, which is the name of our show, as you know, and sign up. It's going to be very cool. It's going to allow us to expand the podcast and do all kinds of fun stuff, and it'll be great. Any other thoughts?
Just, you know, like we so appreciate everyone's support, and, you know, whether it's $1, $5, $10, whatever it is, like we really, really do appreciate it. So, and thank you so much for listening and allowing us to continue to do this, because I love doing it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
My thought is all thoughts start off as eggs, and you don't know whether or not the egg is rotten.
Dave's like, someday this podcast has to end.
Welcome, everybody, to the Legion Season 2 portion of our podcast. FX's Legion is continuing its first season story about David Haller, the son of Professor X, even though we don't see him and people don't really mention that totally happening, still is in conflict with the Shadow King, who he kicked out of his body last season. And now they're in like a search for the Shadow King's old body, and it has taken several episodes of this season to meanderingly get towards the finale, which airs next Tuesday. I think you guys have seen one more episode than I have, because I have not seen the penultimate episode, which is airing, I think, as we record this. But other than that, we're going to have to talk about everything else that's happened up to this moment on Legion. Because in order to try to make sense of it, we're going to have to discuss it specifically. If Legion is not your cup of tea, and maybe you haven't even tried it, tread at your own risk. I don't think anything's going to be super spoilery, because I don't think it's that type of show, but your mileage is going to vary on Legion Season 2, well, I think,
yeah,
because mine has.
Well, I also don't think we should try to make sense of it, because I think life is too short, but I think maybe what we should try to do is like determine whether or not we think this season is a successful experiment, because it's certainly an experiment. So I think we should try to like say whether or not we think it's a success.
I like that. Is that irresponsible without having the conclusion?
Is it a success so far? I mean, like, well, here's the question. Like, if you didn't have to watch this for the podcast, would you have gotten as far as you did in this season?
I think I jumped off at, like, episode 4 naturally and then only looped back. Episode 4 of this season and only looped back when I knew we were doing it. So, but my plan was to always loop back. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have just been happier with that decision had I binged it later. First of all, binging Legion was a bad idea.
Dave, if
there is a Legion season 3, and if Dave has to cover it, future Dave, just keep up with it. Just do a little bit every week. Having to like digest all of it in an hour is like the not nice type of dreamlike. I think the weirdest thing for me about this season is that it has a lot of things that I really like about comic book television. Especially comic book television that's attempting something. I think comic book television that doesn't attempt anything is perfectly fine. I watch a ton of those shows on the CW, but they're not prestige television. They're not bringing me back because of the density of their narrative. They're bringing me back like old comic books did because there's a new one every week. So I think Legion is doing really good at expressing some of the weirder comic book ideas visually, sometimes through character, other times just because it can, and I think that's been really successful. Otherwise, I feel like there's been too much of this season that has been thematic lecture that doesn't necessarily align with how I perceive the plot to be going. So we'll have Jon Hamm stepping in to tell us about something about like mass hysteria or whatnot, but the episode won't necessarily have very obvious mass hysteria themes. So I think something I said on Fighting in the War Room is watching this in Westworld, I could feel equally confused during both, but the reason I think Legion's been more unmooring for me is if Westworld shows you something or tells you something, you know it's important because Westworld's playing a chess game with Reddit. Legion kind of
really
doesn't... Legion kind of doesn't care. Like, I think that Noah Hawley even released, like, a letter at the TCAs or something. It's like, Legion Season 2 is going to change television. We're doing something completely new. So Legion doesn't care if you're on board or not, which just leaves me for a few episodes just floating in the middle of something I don't care about. There's the episode of Sid being trapped in the maze and David has to relive parts of her life over and over again, which I really liked when it was starting, and then when it got to the end I really disliked. There was the string theory episode of the multiple Davids that we got to see because that's supposed to be unified by a line at Amal Farouk at the end that he could choose one of these realities supposedly, but has thus far not been addressed. There's a montage of David's plan that we're pretty sure is going to work out because David's our protagonist that is going to be in the final episode because we haven't seen it yet, but we spent like 2 weeks getting there through pieces that we are willfully not supposed to be understanding what we're seeing. And so I don't know how much I'm supposed to be doing a Great Gatsby High School read-along and being like, well, the octopus is blue and blue's the color of melancholy and Lenny's eyes are also blue and she ends up looking through the blue octopus, or however much I'm just supposed to like let it just wash over me and at the end be like, huh, that was like being on drugs but I wasn't. But if either of those two outcomes are appealing to you...
That second one was me.
Yes, Neil, you binged it recently.
like within the last hour. Mm-hmm. Finished. And I will say the episode that you haven't seen yet is one that is significantly more coherent, and it does sort of get back to the chase, which is this week's episode. So I appreciated that. I did feel like having seen that last one, I understood a little bit more. I think back to Joanna's original question about, like, is this experiment, has it been worth it? I think I kind of checked out where Dave did, right around whatever we covered previously. I hadn't watched any of it. And I think it's one of those shows that I definitely would have gone back to and I would have binged, and it would have been a tough binge. But I think having it be a complete picture would have helped. Because right now there's a lot of different things kind of going on, and they converge in this week's episode to a certain extent. And we sort of get to what I believe the end game is going to be, which is the decision between everyone else's decision about whether or not who's the good guy and who's the bad guy between David and Farouk. And I think that's all important. So as it comes back together, I think it feels more successful. It feels like it's on solid ground. But there are episodes, like whole episodes, that feel like complete detours.
Well, what's so funny is that, like, sorry, I'm so sorry. I should let you finish.
No, that's good. Go. That's really all I wanted to say is that there's whole episodes that are detours, and it's going to be about them kind of pulling it all back together.
Well, so, and that's the thing is, like, I was reading the recaps on Vulture to help me understand what I just saw. And the recapper over there pointed out that, season one had 8 episodes, and this season is 10 episodes, and then one was added, like, just a few weeks ago. And what's crazy is, like, when the 11th episode of the season was added, I was so sure that the reason it was added was because they were definitely canceling it, and they're like, here, Noah Hawley, you get one more episode to wrap it all up. Except they definitely renewed it for a season 3, so, like, I don't know. Why he got an extra episode somewhere in the middle of all production. I guess he couldn't cut his final episode down to an hour or something like that. But so it's longer than it needs to be. But what's weird is that I think actually the meandering episodes are the ones I like the best. Like I loved that Sid episode that Dave mentions, like, warn him eventually. And I really like the string theory episode. Once I stopped trying to figure out, like, how it connected, I was just sort of like, well, this is a great acting exercise for Dan Stevens. That's fun. And it's, like, emotionally connected because it's about a lot of it is about his relationship with his sister, and, like, his sister, spoiler alert, like, had just basically died in the season. So, like, it, you know, it's thematically, emotionally resonant. But logic, trying to grasp onto logic, is not helpful to you in this season of Legion. And that can be frustrating. But that was also true. You know, Dave talked about this on Fighting in the Worm, our great, I guess, sister podcast. I don't know if we're still sisters anymore, but let's be sisters. as it compares, you know, Dave just mentioned Westworld, but also as it compares to Twin Peaks, The Return, which also sort of pushed the boundaries of what we were all able to accept, sort of letting go of logic and just letting a mood wash over us. You know, and so there are ways in which Legion does that, but, like, maybe I feel like Legion should go even further into its mood and away from, a premise that we can follow. And I might even be even more into that. But then there are experiments that fail, like episode 9 is centered on the Melanie character. And I thought that was a real, real disaster. So, you know, like a Sid episode or a David episode. Great. There's also a Carrie episode, basically, you know, like, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, isn't there, there's a Lenny episode too.
Yeah.
Or is that the one that happened this week? It's all very conflated in my mind.
But yeah, like going down the avenues of these various characters is interesting. The production design is the best and craziest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yes.
But, and that is not nothing. Because it isn't, like, just even the fact that there's, like, this one set piece in this season that's, like, a restaurant or a cafeteria that's basically, like, not sushi on sushi boats. Like, just even that concept is incredible to me. There's a lot of scenes that take place in this, like, one locale, and it is just, like, amazing. I don't know. I just think it's genius. So I love watching it. I love the experience of watching it. Don't binge it. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible experience, like a bad drug trip. And don't work too hard at trying to figure out what's going on. Just sort of maybe enjoy some of the themes of what's going on. Does that?
Yeah, I really, and this is one of the more pervasive thoughts I had when I was watching it, was that it is a show that will, I hope, when it comes time for me to get it, I will get it. Like, the show is directing whether or not I'm supposed to get it at this point. And I'm not yet. But maybe in the finale, we'll see, you know, things will sort of come together in a way where I'll be like, oh, okay. Because I felt like that about season one to a certain extent, where I didn't really get sort of how they were playing. I actually didn't realize that, you know, Lenny was in his head for most of the season until they sort of revealed it to the character. So I think it is one of those shows where we are experiencing the same sort of disconnects with logic that the characters are. And that's part of it just being a mood situation. And I think it's really fascinating to me.
I'm close to where Neil is in that I think the reason I was as forgiving of the first season is because the first season had this theme of mental illness and perspectives around it that really also played into like the mutant powers theme. I'm not sure if this season has that theme yet, because I'm assuming they're going to have Jon Hamm tell it to me at some point. But I see all these like pieces floating around, like mass delusions and all that sort of thing. So it's going to be interesting.
Right. Infectiousness of,
like,
you know, there's
wrong ideas, mm-hmm. and how that sort of like grows. If that's the overall theme and they figure out a way to like cap it off, then yes, I could see that threading all the way back through the second season. What I'm worried about is that they're going to leave me with like a fruit salad of different ideas and just assume that I see the artfulness in it, when I don't think it's like that type of show necessarily.
I do have a theory for how it ends, since,
yeah.
And we have not seen the finale yet. But my theory is that it all revolves around what Farouk, the Shadow King, has been doing to everyone. Like, throughout the season, he's been infecting people, essentially, with ideas. And the ultimate delusion that he's trying to create is that David's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the central conflict, is like, he's not trying to defeat David. He's trying to basically ruin David to everyone that loves him so that they fight David.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
So, yeah, I think that's the most I've figured out about this show. And if I'm right, then it was a total guess.
But like, even if it doesn't give us that, I don't know. I expect and demand answers from Westworld. I do not expect and demand answers from Twin Peaks. And I feel like Legion is somewhere in the middle where, like, maybe I'll be okay if I don't get answers. Because it was truly a pleasure to watch. And I think every single performance is great. Chiefly Dan Stevens. And I don't mind having watched all of that. Aubrey Plaza, also good, you know?
Amazing.
But, So I don't mind it if I don't get answers. Westworld, I would not feel the same way about, you know.
Yeah, so it's safe to say we've created a spectrum of, you know, opaque TV shows that goes from Westworld to Twin Peaks, and Legion's kind of in the middle. I would even say maybe a little left of center towards Twin Peaks.
I'm into that placement. At least what I've seen, for sure.
Who knows? Yeah, by next week, this time next week, it could be far to the left of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little bit angrier than Joanna is if this is a mood piece that I was holding on to for two more episodes than I was last season. But there is a season three, apparently, so
I think
maybe
season three should be six episodes, if I'm being honest with you. But, like, weirder. Like, something that Dave pointed out. Sorry, I don't mean to retread your conversation that you had on Fighting the War Room, Dave, but like it is all very interesting to me. Like, something that Dave pointed out is that both Westworld and Legion started with like this very basic premise of a chase and then sort of had to drop and stall for a while until concluding with, okay, we're all back on this chase, this race towards something. And Legion is Amal Farouk's body, in Westworld is to the Valley Beyond. Like, but like give all of our characters one goal to race towards, establish it in the first two episodes or whatever, stall, come back to it at the end. And like I said, there are ways in which that works for me and ways in which it doesn't. Like, in Westworld, there's Akane no Mai, or this week's upcoming episode 8, which I think is one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen, are, in theory, Like, stalling episodes. right?
Well, they're like bottle episodes, right?
Bottle-ish, right?
But it feels weird to be like, oh, it's a prestige show with a bottle episode.
It doesn't bother me. You know, it doesn't bother me if the bottle episode is good. It doesn't feel like a waste of time. But if it's bad, like the Melanie one was last week, I think, on Legion, then I get frustrated. So.
Oh, yes, the Melanie one. You mean she was evil like we showed in the second episode? Good to know.
Well, and it's these two shows that are experimenting with high risk, high reward episodes where it's like, if it's great, it's amazing and they're brilliant. If it's bad, it's like doubly frustrating because it's like, I just wanted to see this chase.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they each go into season three, because I feel like Legion ended last season in a way that they never intended to satisfactorily finish off, just as a way to get out of that season. And I feel like Westworld was so excited to get to that point that they had like outlines for some other things going forward. So considering they both came back with responses that are still sort of feeling similar, it'd be interesting to see if Legion is going to try to tighten up and Westworld's going to try to loosen up, or if they stick to their guns and just get weirder.
Related to this. My perception of the two shows, if I had to say like how much I think the shows care, not necessarily they care, but how much of the audience's reaction is something that they take, you know, personally and to heart and would maybe adjust their show. I think Westworld cares more about what the audience thinks than Legion. I think Legion is just like doing its thing, and if it works, it works. but I think the Nolans I think if something really didn't work, I think that Westworld would change a little.
Jonah and Lisa Joy have the benefit of like this project that they spent like a year and a half on is like their primary focus, other than like the two children that they're raising, right?
Sure, but those are easy.
Yeah, sure. Noah Hawley is trying to do like 9 things at once. And I think you can. I think the first season of Fargo was genius. I think it's slight diminishing. Some people like season 2 better, but like season one and two of Fargo, great. Season 3, I think, super shaky. Legion, like, flashes so much brilliance in just a. I just feel like all the stuff that he's working on now just could use one more pass to tighten it up. You know what I mean? And if he had that time. I think he's overextended. I think he's so brilliant, and I think he's overextended.
Maybe one less montage of the desert, Noah. Maybe just one less.
One fewer hexagon in the season.
Oh. Anyway.
But wait until Dave sees the giant drain plug.
Yeah, that was like, why must it be? I mean, that's the other thing, is I was watching it. I was watching that episode. That's in tonight's episode. There's this giant, like, pink bath.
I think we saw a peak of it with Lenny at the end of the last week's episode.
But okay, yeah. It's just sort of like, I was watching and I was like, why does this bother me and like the tea kettle in Twin Peaks didn't? I was like, what's the difference between these two things? And I just think one is like more dreamlike and the other. I mean, but the giant bathtub drain plug in the desert does feel very comic booky. You know,
I actually have an answer for this because I was thinking about it too, okay. Which is that David Lynch is a trained visualist and Noah Hawley's a storyteller.
Yeah.
So it's like there were times in Twin Peaks the Return where I wouldn't know what was going on, but I'd be in the feeling pocket for the audience. Like I'd be feeling what it wanted me to be feeling. And that's a certain type of control where I think, like, Noah Hawley's very worried that we either won't get something or we'll mistake something as too symbolic or not symbolic enough. Like, it's all sort of, it feels like it was on the page first and then, like, really well production designed. It doesn't feel like it started as an image somehow.
That makes sense.
That's an opinion-wise. I don't know. It could be different for you guys. But that's what makes me feel different about letting Legion watch over me and letting Twin Peaks watch over me. Plus, more in-camera special effects from Twin Peaks and being able to pull those off right next to polygons is amazing. That seems like me getting off track. Legion will be concluding next week. It sounds like were mostly mixed positive. We all agree it was kind of a slog, but I think was worth it. My mind definitely ends in a question mark. Joanna sounds positive. Neil, you're question mark to positive.
No, well, yeah. Let me be very clear. I would not have finished this season were it not for this podcast.
To answer the original question.
But I'm not
think,
mad
honestly,
that
I wouldn't have either.
I'm not mad that I did. Does that make sense? So, yeah.
Interesting. Nice. Television. With that, let's stay in the X universe. So Deadpool 2 came out, and it is not only a sequel to Deadpool, but one of the better X-Men movies, and it is definitely an X-Men movie, both in of the making of a team, the additional mutants that are there. Professor X is actually in this one, unlike Legion.
It has time travel.
There's time travel. What do you mean, kind of? He's there. James McAvoy is on screen.
There. But why is it McAvoy?
What do you mean, why is it? Oh, you mean time period wise?
Yeah.
Do we know what time period?
Boom!
Set in? So,
why is it McAvoy?
Deadpool exists outside of time.
I think is the whole thing
of this movie.
I feel like Professor X was in season one of Legion as much as Professor X is in Deadpool 2.
Fair.
That's true.
Although that one was a chalk drawing of a bald dude, and this one is James McAvoy, but fine.
Also the chair. His chair
also the chair.
In Deadpool 2 a lot.
So Deadpool 2, we'll assume at this point that you've seen it, but it involves Cable traveling back from the future to kill Ricky Baker, who is going to grow up to kill Cable's family. Meanwhile, Deadpool's girlfriend dies very early in the movie, forcing him to care about something.
Which I learned recently is called fridging.
It is called fridging.
And you know what? We need to knock that shit off.
Yeah, what is it? I think Gail Simone...
Yep.
Coined it.
Yeah.
Based off a Green Lantern girlfriend who was literally stuffed in a fridge to give Green Lantern something to care about. That's
as
what
if
happens.
That guy didn't have enough problems.
Exactly. That's what happens to Deadpool's girlfriend, Veronica? Victoria? God, I'm the worst for even not remembering her name. That's how little she's in this movie. But is the impetus for everything happening.
Wait, what is her name? Now I'm confused.
Jessica? No, that's Roger Rabbit's girlfriend.
Oh, no. Why did I...
Vanessa.
Hey, yeah.
I'll never forget Marina Baccarin.
That's
but
how she...
Exactly.
That's Vanessa, how important she whatever. Is that you guys couldn't remember her name.
Well, here's the thing. They kill her off. Deadpool tries to kill himself. Cannot be let into heaven, where Vanessa's on the other side of a, I don't know, invisible abyss water wall. And he can't get through until he gets his heart right, which he learns through a couple of flashbacks has something to do with saving Ricky Baker, the kid. It's a movie about kids, supposedly.
Ricky Baker. That's a Hunt for the Wilder People reference, guys. It's fine. This is fine.
Yeah. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go watch Hunt for the Wilder People. It's better than Deadpool 2. Yeah,
way better.
Not that I didn't like Deadpool 2. I did. I think it pulled back on the humor in the correct places and then pushed forward in the correct places. I will take baby penis over pegging if I have to have a choice.
that's a thing you just said on a recording.
Yeah, that's a thing I just said on a recording. In the world where people could just pull it down onto their phones and chop out just that one little sentence.
That's a brave move, Dave.
Yeah, you know, I'm living life on the edge. I think my biggest problem with this movie is that the fridging happens, and because of that, the movie tries to straddle a couple of different tones, which doesn't necessarily work with Deadpool. Eventually, it finds its stride when it has something to say about teams and optimism, But before it gets there, it's sort of aimlessly wandering around in how charming can Ryan Reynolds be. And luckily, he could be pretty charming, so you almost don't notice they killed the girlfriend when he could have just broke up with her with him for the exact same reason. It would have been just as impactful. But, you know, you don't have to think about it that long, because before you know it, it's a team-up movie that's super fun and has people cracking wise and making fun of other Ryan Reynolds roles. And then, of course, the post-credit scene has Deadpool correcting things throughout time, such as killing himself in X-Men Origins Wolverine or shooting Ryan Reynolds in the head as he reads the Green Lantern script. And then also bringing his girlfriend back to life, but after the credits are over, you know, just in case you thought that mattered. Joanna, what did you think about Deadpool 2?
Okay, so here, I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was nearly as fun as Deadpool 1, and I know that a lot of the fun of the first Deadpool is, like, not having high expectations, just going in and being like, okay, what is this thing that, like, you know, okay, Ryan Reynolds has been doing this viral marketing for, and then you're like, okay, this is actually really fun and funny. Okay, I like Deadpool a lot. Deadpool 2, I will take you to the theater. I saw with a friend of mine, we're sitting there, they kill Vanessa, and I go, wait, no, they can't actually fridge a girlfriend in 2018. You can't actually do that in 2018. And then I was like, oh, it's Deadpool. They're gonna comment on it. It's gonna be great. And then the opening credits were happening. I was like, because like the opening credits were like, did they really just kill her? And it's like starring a guy who can't share the spotlight, apparently. I was like, okay, it's gonna be like a great commentary on fridging. And then it was like, not at all. And then I read this interview with screenwriters in Vulture where they're like, oh, we had never heard of fridging, never occurred to us. And I was like, holy fuck, you guys are writing. I'm sorry, I'm like, I am kind of angry about this. I was not as angry about it until I read this interview. You guys are writing a comic book franchise that is about pulling apart comic book tropes and being super meta about, like, and self-aware about being in a comic book and what that means, and like a lot of jokes about lazy writing, ha 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 ha. And you don't know this, like, it's like, because I had a lot of, I was sort of talking about this on Twitter, and a lot of followers be like, well, I didn't know what fridging was, like, don't be mad at me. And I'm like, well, no, I'm not mad at you, random Twitter follower. You're not writing a book, you're not writing a movie about comic book tropes. But if you're writing a movie about comic book tropes, know your fucking tropes, and know, like, a really hot button problematic one for a huge percentage of your audience. And the fact that they went in without any sliver of self-awareness that's what they were doing really does bug me now. So I wasn't mad about it when I first saw it, and now since I read that interview, I'm mad about it, and it kind of soured me on the whole thing, to be honest with you. So that's my
It's also that they missed the joke.
Yeah.
It was just hanging there.
Not just that, it's like, it's not just that woman, right? It's like Cable's wife and daughter. Like, three women get fridged in order to motivate the men of this, like, movie, right? And
it beats Solo by one.
It's just like, fuck you, dude. So I don't know. That just really frustrates me, because there are, like, and like, I really, really want to like Zazie Beetz' Domino more than I did. I like Zazie Beetz in Atlanta.
Ooh, you didn't like her.
No, I like her in Atlanta, and I like the concept of the character, but the character felt like super flat and personality-less to me. She was all like style and flair and no actual like humanity.
Oh, I thought she was a lot of fun.
Awesome. I did not feel that way. And
that's
so
fair.
You know, and I also... anyway, yeah, I guess I'm a little stick in the mud about Deadpool 2.
I'm gathering them. Okay, so here's the thing. The Vanessa storyline, which I think is meant to be by the movie as like the core emotional arc. But, like, just like we were just talking about with Legion, it's like, why does Deadpool 2 have to have an emotional arc? Like, who cares? Like, they could have just, like, left her at home and had him go on this adventure. Like, it feels weird that they tried to, like, pull a story out of what really is sort of just, like, a random smattering of jokes and action and goofiness, which is all the best stuff in both Deadpool movies. The story part is actually the weaker stuff because I don't know if I really care how Deadpool became Deadpool. I just want to see him do Deadpool stuff. So I will say that the stuff that I
to quote
naturally... Yes. Yeah, exactly. The stuff that I organically found interesting and entertaining was all the goofy, weird, you know, baby leg stuff and every conversation he has with, like, Cable and how Cable's clearly just not here for this shit, but Deadpool's going to give it to him anyway. And the action stuff and the X-Force stuff and Rob Delaney being in the movie. All that stuff is great. The rest of it is like, you could have left it out. Like, you could have left either make Vanessa part of the team or she can hang out at home, but there's no reason to kill her. Which I think the movie admits in the last second is like, it didn't matter. So, my Deadpool 2 review.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that I actually did care about the story in Deadpool 1. Like, I was actually kind of invested in it's Wade, right? Wade's love story with Vanessa and, like, his sense of, like, self-shame, like, his shame and his disfigurement and all this sort of stuff and his separation from her. Like, that actually did, I think, give a nice little emotional core to the first Deadpool movie. In this one... It's reminded me of Ready Player One when, like, you know, the aunt dies and then it's like it's a problem until it's like not a problem and then we're quipping. It's like, you know, this isn't Batman, right? He's not gonna like be upset about her being dead all the time. Like, that's not the tone of this movie. But like, to have that death at the start of the movie gives it like a really weird tone, is exactly what Dave said. Also, I forgot, like Ready Player One, I was distracted and frustrated by the choice to have T.G. Miller still in this movie. So,
Miller super not essential now that I've seen the movie.
It was a super bad dude.
At first I thought, maybe he's like on X-Force. Maybe there's like part of this movie we're not seeing. But not only is he not on X-Force and could have been cut out, but everything you saw in the trailer of the actual X-Force people was shot specifically for the trailer. Good job, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classic comic book movie.
Yeah, but the things I do like in relationship, Negasonic Teenage Warhead and all of like Wade's reaction with the X-Men who do show up, I dig. And then I like Juggernaut coming back. And then I like sort of the implication that, or I guess not implication, we know that there's an X-Force movie coming. So the idea that Deadpool 2 was taking the first step towards once again fixing the X-Men franchise, which has been broken at least twice and keeps trying to refresh itself. I think Deadpool might be able to do it, because what I learned from Deadpool 2 is I don't necessarily need Deadpool to be at the forefront of his movie. I just need him to be around, and I wouldn't mind it if he was around other cool X-Men. So bring on the X-Force, says I.
I should also say, I was sort of conflicted about how I felt about the Yukio character. I know a lot of people who I heard from on Twitter were really pissed off about the use of the Yukio character and how like infantilized the Asian character was and his treatment of her and stuff like that. I know. We all sound like asshole social justice warriors and you're like, it was just a fun movie that has like a pro-gay storyline, so what the fuck is your problem, Joanna? And the cool like black chick and you're like, you suck. But I don't know, guys. Okay, here's what I will say in my own defense of against no one who's yelling at me. I went into Deadpool 2 really wanting to like Deadpool. Like, so I work at this office where everyone has been like really down on Deadpool 2 for like over a year. With every trailer, with everything that Ryan Reynolds does, all of my coworkers are like, this looks like the biggest piece of shit, juvenile, like dick and fart movie I've ever seen. I can't believe it, blah, blah. And I was like, guys, I like Deadpool. I like the first Deadpool. I'm really excited to see this Deadpool. I think I'm just going to have fun at the movies. Like, fuck your, like, whatever. It's just, turn off your brain. It's going to be fun. And then I went, I was like, can't turn off my brain. I'm so mad. So, yeah, I'm as disappointed as anyone else that I didn't like it. So there you go. All right, I'm done.
Interesting. I didn't know that there were problems with the Yukio character.
I did not either.
In my mind, I was like, I don't know. I didn't know. But I mean, now that you pointed out, it's just like the fridging thing. It's like, well, now that you tell me, now I can't unsee it.
You're welcome.
Oh, Deadpool
too. Thank you for bursting my white dude bubble.
So Deadpool 3 hasn't actually been announced yet. We're just assuming it's going to happen in parallel or against X-Force. I mean, after X-Force. In parallel or after X-Force.
Well, yeah, I thought that basically the idea was that X-Force is Deadpool 3.
Yes, but it could also still go the other way. Here's where we are in the world of maybe happening and happening.
This is why I showed up to the podcast.
Movies.
I want you to explain to me what X-Men movies are coming out.
Next Valentine's Day, we will get X-Men Dark Phoenix. It is definitely happening. It is Simon Kinberg directing for the first time, a franchise he has been hovering around and helping foster forward since X3. It is, you know, the young X-Men cast of the redone timeline, how we're referring to them. The McAvoy cast will be coming back to do X-Men Dark Phoenix. And then we were going to have Gambit next June, but guess what hasn't started filming?
What?
What?
Shock me, shock me, shock me.
So Channing Tatum still wants to do a Gambit movie. Uh-huh. No one wants to direct it.
No one else wants it.
No one else really wants to do it, but I'm sure Fox might be more less interested now that they're in the possibility of selling all these characters off and putting up with Channing Tatum's whatever he's doing. But that one still technically could be in production. New Mutants, which was finished, and then they added in a new character in post-production, pushed it back to August of next year, which was, it's our horror-based Maisie Williams plays Wolfsbane X-Men take. We're back to kids. They're in like they're being held at like an asylum for mutants, and it's gonna have like a horror tinge, or was before they added the new character. Who knows if that's changed it tonally or not? Usually, a movie getting pushed back that far doesn't bode well, but usually they don't add an entire featured character after production's done. All right, and here are dates that we have for possible future X-Men movies, at least ones that were announced or that haven't been taken back without any pending deal. November 22nd, 2019 could be another X-Men movie. Like I said, Gambit is not even in production, so we don't even know what that would be. Fox could probably give that away to another franchise if it wants to be competitive with something in November and squeeze something in right before the Star War. March 13th, 2020, for an untitled X-Men film. That one, I would guess, if they could hurry along, X-Force would be our X-Force date, just because Deadpool 2 didn't do horribly, so why not milk that cow while it's still giving out milk? June 26th, 2020. That would be another X-Men movie if there's a team that survives Dark Phoenix and they want to keep them separate. That's our hole for whatever they want to do, whatever Simon Kinberg wants to do, if they have plans for this franchise beyond maybe selling it to Disney. October 2nd, 2020. Yes, they have three possible X dates in 2020, indicating that maybe at one point that was going to be a New Mutants sequel if New Mutants did well. But as of now, it could be the rumored Kitty Pryde movie. It could be the James Franco wants to play multiple man movie. It could be,
oh no,
the Brian K. Vaughan Silver Surfer reboot movie. These are all movies that
I'm into that one.
Indicated
let's do Brian K. Vaughan all up in this.
And then finally, way off in the future is March 5th, 2021, which they have a untitled X-Men film. But I'm going to guess Fox isn't going to own the X-Men property by that point. So
at
we
that
probably
point,
don't have to worry
at
about
that
it.
Point, these will just be Guardians of the Galaxy sequels.
Exactly. Guardians of the Galaxy Silver Surfer and that'll be how it goes down.
Wait, but those are Silver Surfer and Guardians of the Galaxy in the same movie? Blowing my mind right now.
Take my money.
Brian K. Vaughan writing a Guardians of the Galaxy Silver Surfer movie? Hell yeah.
Well, you heard it here
speaking
first.
Speaking of Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn has said that Venom is entirely still at Sony, and they're not allowed to use them even in reference in the MCU. So, actual Guardian of the Galaxy, current Guardian of the Galaxy, Venom, will not be joining the Guardians of the Galaxy anytime soon.
Yeah. A lot can happen between now and 2020.
That's a good point.
We're all acutely aware.
Tom Hardy's Venom becomes the first $2 billion grossing worldwide movie.
I want my Quicksilver movie. When the X team shows up.
You did not see that coming?
Not that one. not the Sokovian one.
You want the X-Men guy.
Evan Peters. When the X team showed up at Deadpool, I was like, I wasn't like, ooh, James McAvoy. I was like, ooh, Evan Peters, Quicksilver, do something. Because he's far and away my favorite part of Apocalypse. So, and kind of maybe my favorite part of Days of Future Past as well. So,
oh my god, I totally forgot about those two movies.
I don't know if like a Quicksilver movie would be good. Like maybe he is just the guy you want for the one set piece and you don't want a whole Quicksilver movie, but man, I like Evan Peters. I want to unshackle him from Ryan Murphy. So, you know, Quicksilver.
I hope they scheduled that cameo date so that Nicholas Holt didn't have to put on the Beast makeup just for that shot. Like, I hope Simon Kinberg was kind. It was like, just walk over and do this door thing real quick.
Do you think it was? Because, do you think it was actually Nick, or do you think like they could have gotten anyone? I guess, right?
I think at that point, what it reads like is that they had to have Sophie Turner doing some green screen work, so they allowed everybody to shuffle over to another set because she's notably absent. After she's going to be starring in a movie where she goes evil, so I'm going to guess.
Is Ready Player One in the shot? Cyclops.
I don't think so. I remember Storm, I remember Beast, I remember McAvoy,
guys,
and I remember Quicksilver.
What if there's a scene in X-Men Dark Phoenix where they're in a room talking and a door opens and it's Deadpool?
And they're like, a portal to another decade? Wow, that's crazy.
I want these two to connect so bad for no good reason.
I mean, I know that Deadpool is about time travel, but he's not time traveling in that moment. So, like, why is it McAvoy? All right.
Well, I mean, the other thing that I was saying that I was pinpointing a 2020 spot where I would put an X film, if Deadpool continues to be the most profitable character after a Dark Phoenix, I think Neil's completely right, and X-Force gets some much more recognizable team members.
Right,
leading into a mashup movie.
There has to be a boiling point at a certain juncture where it's like either Deadpool starts showing up in X-Men movies or more X-Men start showing up in Deadpool movies. Like it's like just malpractice if Fox is going to continue to have this very successful franchise and then continue to make like mediocre X-Men movies.
Yes. So it has been malpractice with the X-Men franchise since 2002.
When did First Class come out? That was the last good one.
Oh, no. First Class was good. You're right. Never mind.
First Class is so good.
Right.
Never mind. I forgot about that entirely. That's how good it was. I was like, that James Bond movie with the mutants. No, that was an X-Men movie.
Bring back Matthew Vaughn and Brian K. Vaughn and let them just Vaughn it up.
The Vaughn twins. Let's get some behind the scenes information from Evan Peters, who says, for the cameo that he did with Nick Holtz, Alexander Shipp as Storm, Ty Sheridan as Cyclops, Cody Smith-McPhee as Nightcrawler, and even James McAvoy.
Oh.
He says, we were shooting the upcoming Dark Phoenix, and they were like, hey, we're going to do this quick thing for Deadpool 2 real fast. We got to get everyone together, so let's do it. He says, we did a bunch of different versions, some not PG, and they ended up using that one. I thought it was going to be for the end credits, and I think everybody kind of did, but it ended up being like, boom, right there, sort of from the first half of the film, which is really sort of weird and shocking. So that means that there's some like fun, hopefully filthy riffing from the X-Cast that'll show up on the Deadpool.
Some great deleted scenes that we can watch instead of anything related to Jared Leto's Joker.
Yup.
Yes. looking at the Earth clock that isn't even at 24 hours past 0 hour. yeah. All right. I think that's Deadpool 2 and the future of the X universe, which was certainly less confusing than the other time we spent in the X universe. And then all of that was all about mutants. Before that, what did we talk about? Oh, yeah, everything else. Con of Thrones, Patreon, cool stuff, and not cool fandom. That but seems like a Storm cool Spoilers fandom. Episode to me. Wait, and actually cool fandom.
Some cool and some uncool.
We had the full fandom. Like Monty, but fandom. That's weird. I had to make it about being naked. Let's move on. Neil, what are we doing next week? And since this week was so on topic, what's next week's very focused topic?
Next week, we're going back to the Citadel. We've been away from the Citadel for quite a while, and I'm sure the mail is piled up. Next week, we're going to do a mailbag episode. It is an open mailbag episode. It's not specifically on any one topic, although there obviously is the Legion finale. There's a new Pixar movie that we might talk about, but we may talk about that in a later episode, so let's not blow it all next week with the Pixar questions.
There's apparently a really good horror movie out that I want to see this weekend called Hereditary that is out for everybody. There's a new Oceans movie coming out.
I have seen it.
Joanna's seen an Oceans movie.
I saw it the night before it was announced that Jared Leto was going to get his own Joker movie.
Minus one day.
So it's B Gino.
One B Gino or whatever. I saw it. I think it was fine. But
come to Storm of Spoilers for all your nuanced film opinions.
Boy,
well,
let
fine.
Me tell you what, Anne Hathaway is great in it.
Oh, awesome. I think I'm going to go see it over the weekend. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
There's a dinosaur version of Pokemon Go that's out that I've been playing.
What?
I've stopped playing the bad Hogwarts mystery phone game. I'm trying to think about what other weird fandom things.
There's a dinosaur version of Pokemon Go?
Yeah, it's called Jurassic World Alive. Get on it, Neil.
But it's a Jurassic World thing.
Well, what did you think a dinosaur version of Pokemon Go would be themed around?
It'd be a Jurassic Park thing. But not Jurassic World.
Guys, well, they call it JW Alive, but you can make hybrids, so I think it is kind of in the story world. I apologize.
I don't know if I like it, but I'll probably end up playing it.
If it's anything like first Pokemon Go, this summer will be the only time it is fun to play. And with that cough and diss to Pokemon Go, super relevant, I remind you to email us at StarWarsSpoilers@gmail.com. with your mailbag questions for next week. We could talk about any of those things, anything else you want. We'll try our best to, you know, be good fandom. Right back at you. Until then, where could people find more of you online? Let's start with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on VanityFair.com. I will be speaking more eloquently about Ocean's 8 on the Vanity Fair podcast, Little Gold Men. You can hear me talking about Westworld on Still Watching Westworld and also Decoding Westworld. And otherwise, you can find me breaking New Year's resolutions on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
You can find me having mostly mixed Star Wars opinions over on Twitter at Rejects. You can find content that I have edited on filmschoolrejects.com. Of course, you can email our show, stormspoilers@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at stormspoilers. And guys, very important, patreon.com/stormspoilers. Get signed up. Get the goodies. Become part of the super family that we're building on Patreon. And thanks in advance for doing that.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E, though I think you should just look at my work that I've pinned to the top of the page and click to that. Don't look at my tweets. I apologize for everything I say online. I'm at Thrillist.com doing a timeline of Westworld, and at Polygon.com still answering your solo questions. And then at FindingInTheWorm.com about a podcast about pop culture, blah, 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 blah. And as Dave runs out of gas, he reminds you all that we are still not falling down.
And I won't fall down.